Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
It's Real College Podcast. I'm Patrick Sharkey. On today's show, producer Emily LePain does some digging and talks to her father, a petroleum geologist, to get to the bottom of why the often wrong science that's presented to us through Hollywood films such as 2015's San Andreas is a problem.
You know, the people didn't know what they were talking about. It tends to erode trust in the earth science community. So then subsequent information, they'll just sort of disregard it.
Later on, I talked to some local podcast aficionados, including friend of the station John Moe, about the podcast medium and its increasing popularity.
If you're doing a radio show, you need to appeal to the person sort of spinning by on the radio dial. And if they land on you, you've got, 10 seconds to grab their attention and keep them. Whereas with a podcast, they've chosen to download what you have.
Jackie Renzetti will be bringing us this week's Word on the Street, and I talked to the K's music director, Luke Michaels, about this week's weekly release spotlight. It's the Real College Podcast. Let's do it. We've all seen the movies, or at least we've seen the trailers for these movies. A normal, peaceful Sunday afternoon is suddenly interrupted by the largest earthquake ever experienced by mankind. Cars fall into giant caverns in the ground. Buildings topple over and crumble to our feet. Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson flies around in a helicopter searching for answers. And while the idea of an earthquake with such a magnitude isn't completely unfounded, the science in these movies typically is. Emily LePain, our version of The Rock, has more.
Whenever Hollywood releases a new natural disaster film, my father always groans. They always follow the same formula. Cue natural disaster. Insert a few pretty faces and a lot of scientific errors, and cover it up with an obscene amount of CGI destruction. But movies are often a form of escapism, so why does bad science in film matter? To find out, I asked my father, a petroleum geologist for the Alaska Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys.
If they get sensational information that is factually incorrect, and they initially, you know, believe it and maybe are scared by it, and then they subsequently find out that, oh, well, that was bogus information, that was wrong, it was fictitious, you know, the people didn't know what they were talking about, it tends to erode trust in the earth science community. So then subsequent information, they'll just sort of disregard it.
And while scientific accuracy isn't the only thing that makes a good movie, far-fetched representations of science can give the public inaccurate ideas of what's even possible within the realm of science, according to Justin Revenaugh, a seismologist and a professor for the University of Minnesota's Geology and Cinema course.
Our ability to control nature is usually very greatly overstated in movies. The core is a fantastic example of bad science all the way through, where people go to the Earth's core and restart it by blowing up some nuclear weapons. They would have no effect, and you can't get there anyhow. So it's just based on a little premise that, you know, some screenwriter read something somewhere.
Our ability to predict earthquakes is also largely overstated. Take the movie San Andreas, for example. Paul Giamatti's character, a seismologist, discovers that the San Andreas Fault is shifting and will soon cause a major earthquake. But Revenaugh says there's no surefire way to predict when an earthquake will actually occur.
He's predicting earthquakes based on some sort of electromagnetic emission from a fault zone. And there's a little something to that. That's been noticed before some earthquakes in the past, observed not to be present before some earthquakes, and it's observed to happen and no earthquake follows. But it's a phenomena that seismologists are looking into. And he takes that and completely predicts that, you know, all of California is going to rupture on the basis of it. And it's just completely implausible.
But the bad science doesn't stop there. The initial quake portrayed in San Andreas is a 9.1 magnitude event, and an even larger event, a 9.6 magnitude earthquake, occurs later in the movie. Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson told Jimmy Fallon that everything that occurs in San Andreas is entirely plausible, including the tsunami. but Thorne Lay, a seismologist and a professor of Earth and Planetary Sciences at the University of California, Santa Cruz, says the events portrayed in San Andreas are entirely far-fetched.
In general, no, it's not possible. The movie had a lot of artistic license in conceiving the scenario that they came up with. The largest earthquake that we have recorded on the San Andreas Fault within kind of the documented history would be the 1906 San Francisco earthquake, which was about a magnitude 7.8 or 7.9 event.
The San Andreas Fault is also a strike-slip fault, which means the Pacific Plate and the North American Plate are moving past each other side by side. But my father says there's no vertical motion like there is in a subduction-related earthquake.
Subduction is a process in which one plate on the Earth's surface slides underneath another plate. It's happening in along much of the margins of the present-day Pacific Ocean, so offshore from California, Oregon, Washington, and southwestern British Columbia. We have an oceanic plate sliding underneath the overriding North American plate. This occurs in what is referred to by geologists as a subduction zone, where that subducting plate slides smoothly underneath the overriding plate. You tend not to have large magnitude earthquakes. In areas where that subducting plate does not slide smoothly underneath the overriding plate, it tends to get locked up. Strain gets stored in the overlying plate until the rocks rupture. Where that is happening are where you tend to get large magnitude earthquakes. And in the process of the rocks rupturing, large tracts of the sea floor can become uplifted almost instantaneously. And in the process of that uplift, they displace enormous volumes of seawater. And that's what creates large tsunamis.
Amid all this bad science, Lay says that the majority of the students he teaches come into his introductory seismology class with no realistic idea of what can happen during an earthquake.
I have been teaching large groups of undergraduate students about earthquakes for many years, and I often find that what they know walking into the classroom for the first time actually comes from cinematic presentations of it. You can imagine that if you were in isolation from any other information source and all you had were movies like San Andreas to inform you about it, you wouldn't really be able to tell what's realistic, what's not.
And for anyone living in geologically active areas, this can be dangerous.
It's really important for people living in areas where there are significant geological hazards to have accurate information of what the risk is. And so that's why I think it's very important for geoscientists to provide accurate information and provide the context so that the general public can make sense out of what the hazard is.
Movies are indeed a form of escapism, and for many, correct science may not matter. But for those living in areas with significant geological hazards, an accurate knowledge and understanding of what those hazards really are can be life-saving. For Real College Podcast, I'm Emily LePain.
For the Real College Podcast, I'm Jackie Ranzetti, here to bring you Word on the Street. On Tuesday, the one and only Kevin Morby will be playing the 7th Street Entry with opening act Jay Bartel. The former Woods bassist and Babies frontman has songwriting talent on the same level as Bob Dylan, and as a really cool but kind of eerie bonus, he sounds a lot like him too. Off of his new album, Singing Saw, here is I Have Been to the Mountain.
Calling out, demanding answers, pleading skies, cry for hours, dropping peace bombs, collecting prayers, sky that mirrors, sky that stares, asking, I've been to the mountain, and I've walked on the shore.
sad of a man's dark reading.
On Wednesday, a local group called Dream On Nielsen will be playing the Cedar Cultural Center. Unlike most cover bands you know, Dream On Nielsen is dedicated to honoring Harry Nielsen in the national effort to get him into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They will release their tribute album and play a whole Harry Nielsen set Wednesday, which happens to be Harry's 75th birthday. So, in honor of Harry, here is Dream On Nielsen with Everybody's Talking.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stop and stare in. I can't see their faces. Only the shadows of their eyes.
On Friday, Angel Olsen will be playing at the Cedar Cultural Center. The singer-songwriter just announced a new album called My Woman, which is set to release September 2nd. Here's a single that she just surprise dropped earlier this month. This one's called Intern.
Maybe you know that it's been too long. Gone through the motions as you sing your song. Doesn't matter who you are.
And of course, on Saturday, we have one of the biggest Minnesota music get-togethers, Rock the Garden. The lineup features headliners Flaming Lips and Chance the Rapper, along with Plague Vendor, Hippocampus, Pleika, M-Ward, and Girl Party, who just announced this week that this will be their last show ever. Recorded live in Studio K in 2014, here is Girl Party with Nightwatch.
Bring my rocks till we own the land. I raise my belly with it. She got so jelly with it. Green face when I own the place. And I'm cussing outside trying to dog that Drake. Chartreuse, chartreuse, I burn. Down that dope to the hot to the ghost. See that you earn. And you want Desi? Guess you know who'd best be. ZZ to the new beat. Pay different needs. Like I'm gonna be mad if they watch me to see. Counting your pennies and wishing to see. The bitches will die in the heat from the cream. Ooh, a future looker sticky with that brother though. Clean up, boo. Only time will tell if you can make it through. Here's a clue. Tick tock and it don't stop. I'll be the doc on the block driving in the flames with the year on lock. 2014 when we bees on top. Oh, we own it. Beyonce be condoning wishes she was Kelly Rowland's in our crew. Ooh, it must be girl time. I mean our time. I ain't hit prime, but we in line. I'm good on her and a back truck don't get hit.
That's it for Word on the Street. I'm Jackie Renzetti and you're listening to The Real College Podcast.
I've never really listened to a whole lot of radio. My first car in high school was a sexy, champagne-colored Honda CR-V. It was 2006, and I'd insisted on immediately installing a third-party deck on my dash, one that had an auxiliary input which would allow me to plug in my iPod so I could play my Sad Guy collection of Taking Back Sunday and Jimmy Eat World, among other Sad Guy tunes. But I did occasionally yearn for something other than the melancholy. At some point, I came across this thing called a podcast, and I downloaded an episode of the most popular podcast in iTunes. It was called This American Life, which was for a long time, and probably still is, the gateway drug for most podcast listeners. Podcasts have been the main source of entertainment in my car ever since. But before we go any further, I'd like to give you a brief history on podcasting. First of all, what is it? Well, you're listening to one right now. That's right. In case you're unaware, The Real College Podcast is, in fact, a podcast. And it's available in iTunes and any other podcatching software that you choose. Okay, so podcasting in some form has been around since the 1980s, yet the term podcasting itself wasn't used until the early 2000s, and most folks really had no idea how to access them. But in 2004, Apple included a podcast directory built directly within iTunes, which helped launch a new wave of podcast consumers and creators. And while the format of podcasting stayed relatively in the background for many years, last year there was a breakthrough. And that breakthrough came in the form of a hit podcast named Serial. And the numbers behind Serial are really encouraging. As of December 23rd, 2014, episodes of Serial had been downloaded 40 million times. And according to Apple, Serial was the fastest podcast ever to reach 5 million downloads. Okay, so now you're up to speed. Podcast creators say that the appeal of podcasting is that it allows its creators the ability to make a show about anything they want. People can make a show about their hobbies and interests, and assuming it's well-made, it's interesting and well-researched, there's more than likely an audience that will find it. John Moe, who's a producer, writer, and host of many great and popular podcasts, just recently started the second season of his podcast, Conversation Parade. It's a podcast centered around the hit animated show from Cartoon Network called Adventure Time.
Who wants to play video games?
BMO! What's on the menu, BMO?
I've created a new game called Conversation Parade.
You know, I floated it to my boss at the time as an idea for something to try that was intentionally narrow. You know, I think there's a lot of shows out there that want to be pretty broad. And I said, well, what if we just go the other way? What if we delight the portion of the audience? And there's, you know, tens of millions of people watching this show, so it's not all that small of an audience. What if we just try to make the best show possible for just this group of people?
Podcasting provides the ability to create a niche show and still attract a passionate listener base. John says that this provides many advantages over podcasting's terrestrial counterpart.
That's a convenience that you have and an opportunity you have in podcasting that you don't have in broadcasting. You know, if you're doing a radio show, you need to appeal to the person sort of spinning by on the radio dial. And if they land on you, you've got, 10 seconds to grab their attention and keep them. Whereas with a podcast, they've chosen to download what you have. And so you're already at a great advantage.
But if podcasting is the future of audio broadcast, there has to be a business behind the freedom to produce what you want. There's still a need to make a living, right? So I talk with Sean Bernard and Scott O'Malley, the founders of the Alive and Social Podcast Network based here in Minneapolis, and they explain that, much like traditional radio, podcasting relies on the use of advertising to help make a profit. However, they feel they're less restricted in the type of advertising that they're allowed to engage in.
The average radio talk radio station plays between 18 and 24 different ad units in an hour. We max ours out at 8. And we really don't consider our advertisers as outsiders. It's kind of like a small town would treat an advertiser, that they're part of the community. They're part of what we do. They sponsor and support what we do. So in some ways, like, you know, maybe the Current or NPR would treat something, but we're allowed to endorse. They're not allowed to endorse these clients. And we really try to look at endorsement situations as much as we can.
While advertising appears to be the main source of income for many podcasts, podcasting is still a very new market. This has led some producers to explore other potential ways to help pay for production. Here's John Moe.
I think there's something to be said, too, for direct audience fundraising. So if you listen to this, help pay for it. And in my experience, people are eager to do that. And I think that's where you get a real advantage with a narrow podcast, where, you know, a lot of the people who are listening to Conversation Parade are passionate about Adventure Time, and they've become passionate about Conversation Parade. And so if you get people who are passionate about the thing you're doing, you know, they'll spend money. I think there's potential in that direct fundraising model as well as the advertising model. I mean, I don't want to say we're making it up as we go along, but we're all experimenting as we go along.
The podcast medium continues to grow, and the podcast community, both creators and consumers, are working to figure out the best possible way to make it all happen. And here at the Real College Podcast, I think we're just happy to be a small part of it. So, you know, help us out. Subscribe to us on iTunes and tell your friends. For Radio K and the Real College Podcast, I'm Patrick Sharkey.
And the butterflies and bees, we can wander through the forest and do so as we please. Come along with me.
Okay, so we're here with Luke Michaels, Radio K Music Director. Luke, how are you doing?
Hello, I am doing well.
Good.
How are you, Patrick?
Good. Oh, I'm just great. And you're here to tell us about this week's weekly release, Spotlight.
Yes, I am.
But before we do that...
Yes, before.
Before we start, do you want to tell us a little bit about what the music director for Radio K does?
Yeah, so my job really is just to kind of talk to a lot of people who naturally want their records played on the radio, so they reach out to me and send me tons and tons of records, and it's my job to sort of filter through that, to sort of craft like a well-rounded week of new ads. And then our collection starts to reflect like a pretty eclectic mix, I
cool.
think.
Cool. Yeah. So do you, I mean, you obviously have a lot of control over like the sound of Radio K.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you cast such a wide net to make it all, for the most part, listenable to a wide audience?
One thing that when I first started doing this, I really wanted to make sure everyone at Radio K was heard. There's a lot of people who want to like suggest albums to me, and like there's a lot of just like excited volunteers and DJs here who want me to play records. And when all those different opinions are kind of reflected in our rotation, then it just naturally kind of becomes the sound that we're looking for.
Well, for this week's sound, what's the release this week?
So this week we have an Olga Bell album. It's called Tempo, and it's out on One Little Indian. It's really cool. It's kind of an electronic pop artist, and pop in like a very light sense. Like she definitely knows how to write cool hooks, but doesn't, I don't think, shove it in your face.
Okay.
She has a pretty cool life. She was born in Russia, and then grew up in Alaska, and then became a producer in New York City. And she's making these really cool records. This is her third. She's put out Dynamite and Kapow. I think it's actually spelled Diamondite. I think it's a little play on words.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. Cool. But they're both great records. And this one is every bit as great. She It's kind of a long record, mostly because it feels like it has such an arc. It definitely struck me the first time I heard it, like it had a beginning, middle, and end, like very well crafted.
Very nice.
Put it together as an album to be heard in a linear way, which
you don't get as much anymore.
Absolutely. Especially, yeah, it's so focused. I think a lot of what I see is really people want to play singles and stuff. They want to send singles and EPs, and that's cool too. But it's also cool when someone puts in the work to make something so complete, which is what this felt like to me. One of the other things I liked is I feel like she experiments a lot with rhythm in a lot of really fun ways. Like there's everything from like dancey production and then like kind of old school hip hop sort of influences.
Really?
Almost hip hop in the sense of she uses production to reference like very simple like jazz hip hop beats from like 90s vibes from this too.
Okay.
Where I think Portishead was another really cool influence on her. So I think she explores a lot of different things in this one record, and the one we have up for download is pretty sweet. It's called ATA, and it's another one that I feel like kind of reminds me of a Portishead sort of sound. It's just very beautiful, but also very sad, like very nice melancholy sound.
Well, we're going to listen to ATA now, which you can download on radiogay.org.
Absolutely.
Cool.
It's great.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Luke.
Yep. All thanks. Right.
Hey son, if I'm rolling, can you tell me, or do I keep from getting in my own way? And don't sugarcoat it, I'll be brutal. Running around without fire, well, too many minutes, tick, tick, tick by. Oh, son, if I'm rolling, can you tell me, or do I keep from getting in my own way?
That's all for today's Real College Podcast, as always brought to you by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Many thanks to Emily LePain and Jackie Renzetti for contributing to today's show. Our producers are Max Fuller, Jackie Renzetti, and Emily LePain, and I am the managing editor, Patrick Sharkey. And a reminder that you can always hear our show live every Sunday at 6 p.m. on Radio K, but you should subscribe to our show on iTunes. What a novel idea! And more information about today's show can be found on RadioK.org, as well as all the other magical things going on at Radio K. And that's it. Have a great week.
Always keep an eye on your work. It's easier to talk here. It's easier for me to get your ear. But son, if I run, what do you am I fucking useless?